So we're talking Whangarei Healthy Living Expo Saturday in the Town Hall from 9 to 4. Mike is going to be, you're doing a workshop.
I am.
And I said, I used the word body work because it was the only thing written down earlier, but you're not actually talking about body work, although that's something you do.
Yeah. So, yeah, body work is my business or my trade, I guess.
What does it mean?
Just
briefly before we get on to what we're supposed to be talking
about. Yeah, cool. So my business here in Raglan is divided between massage therapy and personal training.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I run that locally, and I could go on about that, but that could take up a lot of the interview. But, yeah, that's my focus, and I kind of integrate lots of stuff into that. It's very... I hate to sound catchphrasey, but I'm going to say holistic.
Well, you can't avoid using the word, right? All-encompassing, maybe you could say that instead.
It's all-encompassing.
Health modalities.
It is. So that's where the bodywork part comes in.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So you've got a workshop. What time on Saturday and where?
So the workshop is at 12 midday, and it's in the...
supper room. No, not the supper room. That's specifically not in the supper room. It's in the community house basement.
That's it.
Mike's pointing, I know where he means.
Yeah. So I presume that's where all the workshops for the Healthy Living Expo are being run?
Well, there were two last time. While you were doing one down there was another one happening up in the supper room.
Yeah.
So they've obviously got quite a few. I haven't even gone through the whole list of people who are going to be there yet, which I'll need to do. Somehow squeeze that into the show.
I think there might be five or so running out of the basement there. So I'm on at midday.
Yep.
And the workshop is called Human Connection, and it's basically about community and social connection and why that's such a important part of health and well-being, and kind of the reasons why it is, and then lots of information and examples and interactive stuff about how to build community in your life. Examples of other, you know, communities and cultures that have got really strong community, tools of showing how people have strong community and what they've done to achieve that and the health effects of it, et cetera, et cetera.
So I sort of feel from my position sitting here at the community radio, talking to lots of different people from the community, strengthening our community feels like something that we could do with at the moment.
That's a really good point.
It might just be, maybe that's just me, but... We've all been under a lot of stress over the last few years. It hasn't necessarily been good for us and our relationships. And maybe a lot of people have gone a long way to sorting those. I don't know, but I'm just throwing that in there.
I think that's actually a really good point with COVID and the division that went on. I think in Raglan we're really lucky that we do have a underlying strong sense of community, which although there was division through that time, and I think there probably still is, and it's not just COVID, but it's a divisive time in history. I think there is a strong sense of community in Raglan, which underpins this place, which we're really lucky for. So even when we do have those divisive times, or you know, you just need to take one look at the notice board and see how quickly we can be divided. We do often come back to our core values, which are belonging and togetherness.
Yeah.
Some people might not agree with that. I feel like...
Well, we're also a diverse community, so we can expect diverse views.
We can. And I think, you know, when you look at Raglan, it doesn't take long to see how quickly we can be supportive when there's a... You know, when it's something... major happens, how quickly people jump into,
like the people whose house burnt down a few weeks ago.
Totally.
And there's a couple of times that's happened in the last couple of years, and talking to the other family it happened to, they said they were overwhelmed with the support. They said not that it was good to have the house burned down, but the feeling of support from the community was a real peak for them.
Totally. So, I don't think that's easy to find, to be honest.
No.
I've lived in a bunch of places where I've kind of intentionally moved there thinking I would find a strong community. And if I'm honest, it's not often that easy to find. And I think we should be quite grateful in Raglan that we do have that.
Is it a part of it that the community, that the town itself is a certain size?
I think so. And
is it,
I think,
like a one aspect of
totally. I think it is, and I think there's also quite an intentional. There's a certain intentional way that people want to live when they move here, or that they're brought into.
Yeah.
So if you move here, being part of the community is kind of part of the deal.
Yeah, and people are looking for something different or interested in something different here. So
yeah,
those things that you feel in places, let's say it like Hamilton, where if you're a bit too different, you kind of feel like you're overstepping the mark a little bit. You don't feel that out here. So it's quite welcome. It's a welcoming place for people who are a little bit different, I think, because people just don't.
Such a good point.
Like the example I always use from homeschooling our kids, when we tell people in Raglan, I mean, they've grown up now, but when we told them we were going to do that in Raglan, people are like, oh, cool. You know, you tell it to people in Hamilton and they're like, don't know about that. You know, totally. And even if they weren't being judgy or anything, but they were just like worried about the idea of something different. So that was quite a strong kind of reaction. So
totally,
yeah,
totally. And I think that is the sign of there being a sense of community when all elements are brought in rather than pushed out or kept outside. And you know, there's one of the principles in permaculture, which I might be getting this wrong, but I'm going to have a crack. It's something around bringing in the fringes or accepting the fringes.
All the actions on the fringes.
Honouring the fringes or something
like
that.
The edges.
Yeah, the edges.
The edges are important, yeah.
And
the interactions that happen at the edges are very productive.
Totally.
I'm sounding like I know what I'm talking about, but I don't really either. But
it's that point, right? So if there's someone or a group of people doing something that's a bit fringe, there's two options where that behavior gets pushed out because it's something new and fearful, or it gets brought in,
yeah,
and you know, it's becomes part of the whole. And I think Raglan's really good at that. And you just need to look across. A good example is small business in Raglan, where I think it's quite a hub for starting a small fringe business, which could be a little bit left field. And people will embrace that and get on board and support. And I think there's so many examples of cool businesses that have started here which have been a bit fringe.
Yeah.
May not have had that head start.
We don't have the population base to sustain.
Totally.
I'm actually surprised a lot of the time when people start things here and I just think, no, we don't have the population base to sustain that, and they fine, which shows what I know. But
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And I think that's... I think we're lucky to actually live somewhere where that's embodied. And the workshop, in terms of the workshop, I think, you know, when you look at the reasons why community is good, or good for your health and well-being,
yep.
You can see it, and feel it, and you can experience that in Raglan firsthand, which is cool.
So what is the, like, there's some research behind this, right? The research,
yeah.
A lot of research.
There's lots of research.
The effect of community on our well-being.
There is. It's been a big topic in the health and well-being kind of spectrum.
Yeah.
There's a few studies, I think. So me and Aaron were talking before the interview quickly about, there's a study called the Blue Zone Study, which they've actually just released a doco on, or a series on Netflix, which, so I'd say people listening may have come across the Blue Zones. And there's five areas in the world where people are living the longest, but not just living the longest, but in good health.
So yeah.
They've got the most centurions.
Right.
And they are, I even wrote them down, Aaron.
They're not here, are they?
They're not here.
No.
One's in a place called Icaria. I might be saying that wrong. That's in Greece. Loma Linda, which is in California. Sardinia, which is in Italy. Okinawa, which is Japan. And Nicoya, which is Costa Rica.
Is that, so, that's a bit hard to see some commonality there.
Yeah.
Off the face of it, right?
Totally. Well, what they did in the study, so there was, it was a National Geographic study, and this, they were like, what's going on? Why is there so many healthy centurions? So they literally went through and just looked for that, for the common elements, even though culturally they were quite different and geographically they were quite different. And they did come up with 9 common elements.
Right.
Don't ask me to repeat them because I haven't written them down.
You haven't written them down.
I can tell you a few.
Just give it a taste of it. Because, I mean, we're advertising your workshop, so people are going to tell them the whole answer now. Well, we couldn't anyway. It's probably like an hour, is it?
I think so, 40 minutes maybe.
Yeah, okay.
So some of the common elements are, one, a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Which is a big one. So food. I'm going to say food. It sounds like a general term.
But what you eat has got to be important.
Yeah, and I think across the Blue Zones, they identified a plant-based primarily diet, which wasn't uniform. So, for example, in Okinawa, which is coastal, they eat a lot of fish.
Right.
So it's not, but, you know, in principle. Movement for life. So you've got these 98-year-olds who are still physically working the fields and the land, and that's such a key part of the longevity studies. And that's very conclusive. Rest is a big one. So actually having that time of recharge and rest and being intentional about that.
Yeah.
Community.
Yeah.
So that almost comes out as the strongest factor.
Right, really.
Amongst these 5 places.
Mm. What about just happiness? Are the older people happy? And I ask that question because in our culture at least, a lot of older people are known to be quite grumpy. Let's put it on the table.
Mm.
And I could sort of see, now I'm in my 50s, I can sort of see how maybe that might be starting to happen. So if you're really grumpy and like not happy with the world and your life and everything, like that's not going to contribute to longevity, is it? And you might not even want it to. The thought of being retired and grumpy for 40 years might actually terrify some people, I don't know.
Totally. And I honestly think that's such a good point because it's a chicken and egg thing with that, because what creates happiness? Does happiness create all these other things like a sense of belonging and making you want to move more, or does having those things in place create happiness?
Right, yeah.
And I think I just watched that Blue Zone documentary the other night. I've only watched the first episode, but that one was on Okinawa in Japan, and They showed these groups of centurions or close to centurions who had this. They've got a thing there called it's a cultural thing called a moai, and it's like a social group or network that they intentionally make amongst themselves, small groups, which support each other through anything from financial to family crisis to anything. But it's an intentional group that's set up for that. It's a cultural thing, and so these older people were part of a moai, and it showed them, and they were interviewing them, and the stuff they were doing, that, you know, they were dancing and singing and laughing and, you know, eating with friends, and they all said that being happy and joyful and playful was a massive reason why they'd lived to an older age. And the reason they felt like that was because they were part of something.
Yeah, and our culture has become so systemized. We put our kids go in a school there, and the adults are working, and our old people are in the home over there, and it precludes a lot of interaction. And I think people use, I was thinking about this the other day, people use things like for their social interaction, yoga classes and weekend workshops on clay, making things with clay, and just two examples pulled out of the air. But I wonder if the drive for all those classes and things is underneath it is the search for social connection. And we're having to pay for it, and we're having to pay for our social connection because we don't have any of those systems like you've just talked about in Okinawa.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think there's a few points there. One is, well, you know, personally I do that, so I go to yoga with Patty on a Monday morning every second week because I can, and you know I live alone with my son half the time, and so a big part of me doing things like that is being able to go and connect into a group of people and starting my week off feeling like I'm connected into, I'm not just at home on my own.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I work from home and I'm with people all day, but you know, it's still, you want to be part of the community. So definitely, I think so. I mean, that's my own experience is I love yoga, but I love the fact I'm going out there and starting my week as part of the community.
Yeah.
And I think the other point to that one is that comment that you make is that the five places in the blue zones are unique in that they're smaller, very traditional communities in general.
Right.
So they've got these long-held traditions where across all the ages everyone's bought in. So they're not separated out. So like a big one in Sardinia, which is a little island off Italy.
Yeah.
One of their big elements of the reason that they're living so long is they live in extended family groups. So they have grandparents living with grandchildren, you know. Everyone's all living together, maybe not in the same house, but in the same complex.
And that's widely considered to be a nightmare by a lot of people in our culture.
Yeah, totally.
And so how is it that there's these two places doing it completely differently? that's a big question. I don't expect you to actually answer that in a comprehensive way, but
I think you can't deny that there'd be people that aren't into it, even in Sardinia.
But yeah,
I think when it's culturally, you know, when it's cultural part of your culture, you're not really second. You're not questioning it, really.
I tell you what, I think we're going to end up doing that again because we all know the cost of housing now.
Yeah.
You know, like, and like I know, I don't want to be the retired couple sitting in the big old house while our kids are struggling in a tiny home. Right? That seems wrong. You know, I know the baby boomer generations, some are known for wanting to hold on to their wealth to the bitter end, but our generation, Generation X, is still reasonably well off, but the next generation's housing is clearly a big problem. Your son's only six, so you're probably not thinking about that yet, but that's something I think about.
Yeah, it's really true.
So we might end up, and we might have to work out ways to do that, and I guess we have to work out skills for mediation and conflict management and not just leaving, you know. Yeah.
Because we haven't had that as part of our culture, so you have to reimagine it.
And it's always a challenge. It was a challenge for my father to move from do as I say to negotiation with with his adult children. That took him a long time, you know.
Oh, that's such
and
a good
if he was with us, he'd probably acknowledge that as well, you know.
For sure. And that's where you want to be mindful with how you're parenting. So then when you get to that new phase of life, maybe you don't have to make that transition.
Well, he was a school principal, you know, so he was highly skilled at managing children and adults too, because he was a principal. He had like 30 or 40 staff, so he was always managing people. But anyway, this is not a counselling session for me.
Yeah. I mean, it is a point though, you know, and, you know, I think it takes a large amount of humility to transition into a new role, you know, like you say, with your dad or with grandparents. And if that hasn't been something that's been kind of culturally put upon you, you know, maybe you can't do that. Maybe it's just not an option.
What have I just done to my headphones? I can't hear anything.
We're malfunctioning.
That was weird. I dropped my cell phone on there. It doesn't matter. Like, I can see on the levels. I just take my headphones off. That's very strange. That's very distracting for me.
Do you want a moment?
No, we'll just. What were we talking about? Just remind me what we were talking about.
I was just saying the transition into from you know, like your father transitioning into a new role, especially if he's been in you know, a position of, you like you say, like, you know, organising adults and children and being kind of a leader and you know, kind of transitioning into that takes a lot of humility. And I think some people may not be able to cross that bridge.
And we don't have any models or narratives about that in our culture. We have a big thing around status. And I used to poo-poo the idea that we wanted status or that we needed status, but it's actually a killer.
Mm.
Like women aren't interested in us as single guys if we've got no status, and our peers look at us differently if we lose our status. And so it's really hard
that's such a good point.
It's really hard if you've been someone, and we're back to my father talking about someone with quite high status, like he was quoted in the newspapers, he was principal of one of the biggest schools in Hamilton, and you know, so there's a lot of that going on, and it doesn't feel good to drop that. And if there's no narratives around being an elder who listens in our culture, like in our culture, the people with status, they talk and the rest of us listen, right? That's the narrative.
I think that's a good point. I think this could be a whole nother talk that we would need to book in for, but I think we are also entering a new world where those things are slightly shifting.
Yeah, I've actively avoided situations where I'm like that. Having said that, I now run a radio station where I have 40 volunteers, so maybe I haven't avoided it, but
yeah.
But you know, like they're volunteers, so if I'm rude to them, they'll just leave. Whereas, like, if you're the boss and you employ someone, you're rude to them, they put up with it, right? More or less.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite in that. Like, but I've consciously avoided that,
for sure.
And I don't know whether lots of other people in our generation have, or whether it's just because I'm in Raglan and we're not a very representative population for the rest of the country.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's an overall slow moving shift in what we recognise as achievement or status or, you know, being able to, you just need to take one look at social media and see that we are starting to be able to honour our things that were once seen as weaknesses as potential strengths, or to not, you know, to be able to be much more open about these things. Which before, your status would be that you were not vulnerable, or you didn't have to be open about something you saw as a weakness, or where the changing culture, even if it's a slow change, I think is potentially making that more normalised.
Are you familiar with Simon Sinek? He's a guy whose message is about bringing, if I could sum it up really quickly, it's about his messages to the business community about how you run your business and thinking. He calls it the difference between a finite and an infinite game. But basically, his comment is, he said 20 years ago no one would have been interested in this message. He said the CEOs were all, you know, the ones who were deified were the ones who could cut a third of the workforce in their you know, in their corporation, and those are the ones that everyone looked up to. And so I think his comment that attaches to that is that, yeah, he said 20 years ago no one would have been interested in his message. He never would have, you know, he's got a YouTube channel with millions of followers, and he does talks everywhere, and he's get hired by corporations to come and talk to them.
That's interesting.
Yeah, there's an opening for that message now that didn't used to be.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And an expectation from the next generation. Is that what old people say?
You are middle-aged now.
I am middle-aged.
But sorry.
There's an expectation, I think, from, say, 20-somethings that are entering the workforce as well.
Yeah.
That you know, their needs as a whole human are met in the workplace, not just a robotic, which I hear is problematic too.
Well, that's where the term snowflake comes from, I think, which is snowflake's right. A term that I sometimes think it's a term that a bully uses to, when they're annoyed that the person they're bullying is fighting okay. is fighting back or yes. complaining about it, right? I tend to think there's an element of that in it. But there's culture changes as well. But, yeah, you're right. I just put up, when I was young, I just put up with bosses who mistreated me.
Totally. It was just the expectation.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. And it was my job to deal with any problems that arose from that.
Yeah.
For all of us, not just me as an individual, that wasn't where I was at.
Totally. It was completely normalised.
The irony is, if you stood up to those bosses, they also respected it.
Mm.
And that secretly, that's what they wanted you to do, but they thought they were helping you by being mean till you stood up for yourself, some of them.
There might be some truth across the spectrum.
Yeah, do you know what? You asked me if I was all right with the headphones off. This interview is going differently now that I haven't got the headphones on anymore. This is really weird.
It is.
Yeah. I feel like I've lost, the interview's lost its coherence.
Now it's just a conversation.
It's just this conversation. And we aren't not talking about what we started talking about, which was community and social connection as an important part of our well-being.
Yes.
And I should say, folks, if you tuned in halfway through, we're talking to Mike Jewell. If you're a regular listener of the station, you might know his voice from the show he used to do, Sunday Special on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And I hope he'll be doing again sometime.
Me too.
If you want to hear him next, it's at the Health... posters over there. Fungaroa Healthy Living Expo. From 9 till 4 it is here in the Town Hall with workshops going on, I believe in the supper room like last time, and certainly down in the basement of the community house just across the grass next to the Town Hall. It's a lovely walk across there. So you're going to be there at midday, you said?
Yep, I'm going to be there at midday. The workshop, I'll tell you a few topics we're going to cover.
Yeah.
Just going to cover why is, I mean, we've cover this a lot in this conversation actually, but why is community a big part of the well-being or, you know, health circle, or why is it important for those things in our lives? I'll tell you a quick couple of things. The couple of the reasons it's good are there's these amazing hormones in our bodies called, I mean, I'm talking to you like as if you don't know, but you do. But oxytocin and serotonin, you know, I listen to your show a lot, so I know that you know these things. But oxytocin, they call it the love hormone, which is released in your body when you feel connected. And it doesn't have to be in a romantic relationship. It's just connection. So when oxytocin is released in your body, so this is getting into the science of it, because we kind of know we feel good if we're connected, but what's actually going on, you know?
Yep.
And there's always people that want to know both sides. So the oxytocin, when that's released in your body, that is a massive hit of well-being and happiness and connection. And at the same time, it smashes cortisol, which is your stress hormone.
Right.
Stress hormone.
Yep.
So it overtakes it, basically.
I wasn't aware of that, but that it pushes out the cortisol. It
pushes out the cortisol.
Well, that's my phrase, which I just made up now, so it might not be accurate.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, might not be accurate as well, but in principle.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, that across a massive spectrum of health, of the health spectrum, is a good thing. So, you know, inflammation, your immune system, digestion, mental health, lowering stress, you know, all these things are affected by that simple release of a hormone. Such a simple thing, you know, and how long have we got?
Well, kind of we're supposed to be wrapping up, so.
Okay.
Give us the skinny
version. I'm going to say a very, very quick extra here.
Yeah.
So this is a part that I really love about community and social connection, is that when they look at nutrition, it's dwarfed by community in the sense of belonging. So you could have the most perfect diet in the world, following what you think is going to give you amazing health, which isn't a bad option as well, but if you don't feel connected or a sense of community, you're not going to absorb any of those nutrients.
Oh, that bad. Okay.
Yeah. Because essentially your system is in fight and flight. Digestion
is
not happening then.
Yeah.
And so it rises above nutrition, which I really like.
Yeah, that's an important to know. All right, and you're going to give people the details on that? And other things to do with community and well-being?
Yeah, so basically going to talk about why it's important, how community's built, you know, real simple stuff. A few case studies from those areas in the world which have got longevity through community. And that's going to be it.
Okay, so that's midday in the community house basement, part of the Healthy Living Expo.
On Saturday.
On Saturday. All right, thanks for coming in, Mike.
Yep.
Okay, folks, we're going to have a little break, and when we come back, we're talking to Diane Davies.